Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
Tonight, my topic is the discrimination mind. Just looking around what's happening in the North America, and so I decided this topic to be appropriate and also a timely topic to talk about. Okay, this discrimination mind. Is this the same as discriminating mind? There's a slight difference. We are living in a world that institutionalized discrimination exists and has been existing in human history for long. Just exist perhaps in different forms, but throughout the human history, no matter which continent, what time period of human history, it exists. Discrimination against differences in ethnicity, races, religions, gender, sex, sexual orientation, and even ages. And how about the people in the same race? Does it mean that discrimination vanish among them? No. Okay. Even in the same race, people of the same race, they also have discrimination based upon gender, sexual orientation, religions, and moreover, physical, intellectual, mental, psychiatric disability. Perhaps not political affiliations. Identified, support which political party or nominees, especially in this in the U.S. presidential election year. It seems that a kind of a division based on different views toward different group of people, races, and this discrimination seems to come into being. And that another new kind of a discrimination, which is definitely not a good thing. So what do all these tell us? In the past, before technologies, industrial revolution, technology advancement of cell phone, computer, created this discrimination, institutionalized discrimination, does exist in human history, no matter where those people are, which territory they are, what color they're of their skin, what religions they have. What does this tell us? And this actually leads us to inquire ourselves. Do I possess a mind of discrimination? Do you? What do I really discriminate against? And this discrimination mind in our society is the collective of discriminating mind of each individual. It's a collective. Doesn't belong to a certain group of people. Every one of us have this discriminating mind. When we encounter people different from us that we don't know of, facing the unknown, who they are, what they would do, how would they affect us, what did they do to us, we feel insecure and uncomfortable. Our sense of security is threatened somehow. And the easiest things to do to protect ourselves, or how our defensive mechanisms operate, is first to make distinctions. Differentiation, make differentiation of he, she, and I, they, and we. You see? She, he, and I, they, and we. Second, first we make the differentiation, clear distinction that you are not me, I'm not you. And second, establish forming the notions of good and bad, superior, inferior, civilized, uncivilized, all kind of these notions start to form to substantiate the belief, the notion that we establish to support, substantiate such differentiation or discrimination against the others. It's a rationalized process. When we feel or we're being threatened, not completely secure, and then we start to come up with all sorts of reasons, rationalize it to substantiate our belief that we are good. She, he, or they are not good. At a certain rate, we will not say we're the bad one, they're the good one. And part of it is also a human nature. It's how our society, the human world, endures, support living in a world of competitions. competition brings out prosperity, growth, and even playing the sports of golf, you compete. And you support, giving a big prize, money, a lot of money rewarded for the winners of the competitions. That's telling everyone, yes, the winner is the good one. Is that the society, the human world, honored, appreciate? So we live in a society, we're brought up in this society, endorse, support competition. And it may be partially influenced by some sort of philosophical thoughts, as survival of the fittest, the capable one. And destruction of the weak. Well, unfortunately, we're seeing that happening in our neighboring country. Or some of the religions actually telling their congregation, yes, people of color, are inferior. And people just absorb these notions, these concepts, embody in them. So, like every one of us here, we come out of a competition as a winner, we feel proud, we're happy. We may even become arrogant. And then we despise others, the losers, and thinking they are inferior and looking down on them. What if we are the loser? And self-disparage, low self-esteem develops. And we may be jealous of others, the winner. Oh, he's just lucky this time. You know, we feel we're still very competent. He's not much better or superior than us. But if we encounter a person, it's much, much better, much, much superior than us. In a sensation of worship develops. We can see that, I mean, in our world. So this is how human nature. We are the winner, we despise others, we feel proud, arrogant, look down on others if we were a loser, and we have very low self-esteem, and you know, and become jealous of others. So this is how this discriminating mind come into being. Part of us, part of the society, and wrong notions, wrong teaching. Okay. So that's why the Buddhism said, you know, all of the knowledge they experienced that we had in the human world are actually distorted views, upside down views. Okay. So what kind of effect that this discriminating mind bring forth? We definitely have seen a lot these 2 weeks. We're still not completely out of the COVID-19 crisis, another bigger riot, bigger problems came about. And it's not just in the United States. It's a one single incident. The police wrongfully and killed persons, take away person's life, very brutal. And the whole world react to that. It's actually beyond our imagination. The whole world. So this is the harm and damage that could bring to our society, a country, the whole humanity. Just like right now, the Black Lives Matter regarding the unjust police killing, and prior to that, Me Too movements. And how did that affect our family? Well, just think about a brother discriminates his mentally or intellectually disabled young brother. The family torn. The heart of the parents get torn. And the kid, the child of a deaf parents being bullied at a school because his parents are deaf. And his classmate mock his deaf parents doing the sign language. What kind of damage that they created, imposed on this young little child? And for us, individual, fellow practitioners, how did this discriminating mind affect us? The discriminating mind is the obstruction to our practice, prohibiting us to see our true nature, prohibiting us from becoming awakened. We can't see ourselves clearly. We can't see others clearly. We can't see the truth. This is how bad, how serious. We don't recognize that every one of us has this discriminating mind, and how serious, how badly it can affect our practice. So what should we do? Is there a practice in Chan Buddhism that can help us to reduce this discriminating mind? Yes. There are various methods. And then here, I'd like to introduce you, share with you one method directly addressing the discriminating mind. Directly deal with this discriminating mind. And this method is called direct contemplation. Some of you practice in our tradition and participate in our retreats. I'm sure that many of you have used this method. For some of you, perhaps it's new to you, this direct contemplation. I will just explain briefly in a concise way. First, we need to know how our discriminating mind comes into being. How does it come to being? In all circumstances, when our six sense organs, or mainly the five sense organs, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, come into contact with an object in the environment, come into a contact, what did you do? How would you usually react? Ah, that's Savannah. Oh, that's Tom wearing a blue t-shirt. You name that person. If you don't know that person's name, you're in big trouble. Don't we? Yeah. We label that person. We recognize that person with a name. We label that article, that place with a name. So given the names, a lot of things come with the name, which is all fabricated and built in your mental constructs. Tom, a man, you know, in his 50s, funny, and, you know, like to joke, and, you know, very friendly. Okay, all description come out. Maybe Tom is friendly to me, but perhaps not entirely perceived the same way in another person's perception. Right? And then we describe it. And then we compare. Yeah, he's so sweet. Yeah, sweeter than Savannah. Oh, God. Oh my God. I'm sorry, I'm just using an example. You're just, two of you, just in the middle of the screen. I'm sure you won't mind. So next comes the comparison. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look good in blue. He should be wearing like a, you know, like a sage color or apple green color. You see the comparison come out, and then he would look younger, 5 years younger. Don't we do that all the time? Yes, we label it with a name. And how does name come about? We give it a definition according to our own terms. You know, certain forms, certain act, certain functions, and then its relatedness to us, you know, through our perceptions. And unfortunately, our perceptions do not see the truth. And our perceptions are mostly distorted, tainted, biased, not complete, not thorough. Right? Agree? And then we describe and compare according to our knowledge, to our memories, to our own experience, and our judgment. And all these, knowledge, experience, memories, and judgments, are all resulted from, or originated from, a self-referentiality, or a self-referential pointer. That's the term used in the C and C++ programming language. A self-referential pointer. Yes, exactly. Much easier to understand. That's right. From that self-referential pointer, we form our, build up, establish our knowledge. When we read something, we didn't really, as the author says, we go through an interpretation. Our experience, our memories, our judgments. So through these all very, very complicated multiple layers of process. That's how a discriminating mind establish and further substantiate, reify by our knowledge, experience, memories, and judgments. So the direct contemplation deal with our discriminating mind directly and try to help us to see our discriminating mind, how it works, and then helps to reduce and dissolve this discriminating mind. And how do we use that method? Usually we'll employ our eyes or ears. Eye seeing with the sight, seeing things, then object, and the sound, ear to hear a sound. Perhaps for beginners using this method, to start with the eyes, with the perception, seeing an object is easier because the sounds is always changing, floating, not unstable. But choose a static object, unchanging, unmoving, as the object of our contemplation, is the object that we direct our awareness to, seeing this object with our eyes. Okay? And during this period of contemplation, awareness, direct our awareness to that object, and you may find thoughts will come up. The thoughts involves labeling it, giving it names, okay? And then perhaps you decided, okay, you had an apple, you are going to use the apple as your object of contemplation. The apple lying in front of you, you're just looking at it. Very likely, apple is the first thought that will come arise. Okay? So do not label it. Do not give it a name, apple. Do not describe it, how it look, what's the color, the shapes, how they smell, and do not compare it with others. Oh, I wish it would be orange. And then afterwards, finish the contemplation, I can happily eat my orange. So in the process, not to give it a name, label it, not to describe it, not to compare it. And these are all the manifestations of our discriminating mind. And before we engage in this practice, we need to prepare ourselves. You don't just go and sit down in your homes and take the apple in front of you, start contemplating that. You need to prepare yourself. How? We need to harmonize our body and mind in a condition, in a situation that's conducive, that's suitable for the practice of direct contemplation. And that is relax our body, relax our mind. Body has to be relaxed. The body is not tense, not agitate, not tight. Okay, we need to adjust, fine-tune the environment, the condition for meditation, and settle the mind. So the mind is calm and clearly aware. And also, use the eye to see the object. Your eyes has to be relaxed too. not staring at it. Okay, the eye has been relaxed too. The eyes usually are very one of the two spots in the body that's tense all the time. Okay, relax the eyes. And look at this object as it is the very first time you see it with the fresh eyes. And then in the process, you'll find that a lot of wandering thoughts come up. And they are all associated with labeling it, describing it, compare with it. When you realize that, discover that, stop it. And direct your awareness to see that object in a very relaxed manner. Body is relaxed, mind is also relaxed. Mind needs to be settled and calm. That's very important. When your mind is calm and relaxed, the mind will gradually open, be able to absorb, accept, perceive. And all these wandering thoughts, discriminating thoughts arise. They are just exactly the obstructions. Step in between you and the object. You're obstructing you, seeing as it is. And all these are the discriminating thoughts. When you describe something, you're discriminating it, giving it a definition, a form, a shape, with a lot of baggage. And those baggage are your memories, your experience, your judgment, your knowledge, your decision, your choice that you have made, accumulated in your whole life. And perhaps also from previous lives. You're so strong. So when you do it, when it arises, just simply not paying attention, not to be disturbed by these thoughts, just direct your awareness to that object. And in a very relaxed manner. And then your minds will become calmer and calmer, clearer and clearer, less wandering thoughts. And then you will be surprised that you will see something that you have not seen before. Believe me, that you can do that. It's not complicated, but you need to prepare yourself to do it. So this direct contemplation, we don't usually tell our practitioners in the retreat to do it in the first couple of days. It always, you know, introduce to them and engage in the practice in the perhaps the fourth or five or six days. And they will then see the effect. They need days to settle down their body and mind in order to practice engaging this method effectively. So that's a particular, a very direct forward method of direct contemplation. Actually, this is how we practice in our sitting meditation too, right? When we do this, no matter, you know, you're sitting in a posture, no matter you're doing the counting the breath or be aware of your breath, there, when there's a wandering thoughts arise, just don't pay attention to it and then come back to your breath, come back to your numbers, right? That's also direct contemplation. In the same manner, in the same spirit. And when we say, when you eat, just eat. That's direct contemplation. Apply in your daily life. When you walk, you just walk. When you bath, just bath. When you're taking a shower, you're singing. Your mouth is singing. And then your brain is thinking of something else. Your mind is overloaded. Your mind doesn't even have a moment of peace. Okay. So how do we practice in our daily life? And to reduce this discriminating mind. As I said, apply the method of direct contemplation in almost every activities that we are doing. And when you become more and more familiarized with this method helps us to know ourselves and help us to see things clearly. What lies between we and the objects is all these wandering thoughts, all these discriminating thoughts. When they slowly die down, fade away, clear, completely vanish, all these discriminating thoughts, minds, nothing in between. And then you can see the things more clearly, truthfully. So we will not be bound and conditioned and influenced by our past experience, memories, or judgments. Don't rely on them. Rely on the method of contemplation. And that's the way to go. And then, what else can we do? If something unfortunately occurred to us, perhaps that we have been mistreated unfairly, treated. What can we do? How should we do? First, see this whole thing, this experience, this matter, this instant as an incident. An incident, an act that we don't agree with, an act of mistreatment, a matter of injustice. And see it, treat it as an incident, an act. And then find out what you don't like about it, what you disagree with it, what you are feeling upset or mistreated. And focus on that. Focus on that mistreatment. Focus on the way they handle things. Focus on the matters, the incident that's happening, that's not fair, not right. Okay. Such as the police brutality and violence. They apply unequal guidelines in firing gunshots towards suspects. Obviously, they have looser, lenient guidelines when they facing the suspect of white people and different guidelines toward the black people. And what you don't like is the injustice, is the brutal action, is the unequal guidelines, is the act itself. It is the act that we should condemn. But often, we will skip jump to the person who does this act and generate afflicted emotions of anger, hatred, opposition, or hostility toward that person, and then develop a fixed notion, toward that person. And that fixed notion, usually a bias, prejudice, or discrimination. treated as instant instead of direct to that person. It is the same approach, same manner, how we deal with our leg pain. You treat it isolated as a leg in pain. The leg is experiencing pain. Not, I'm in pain, I'm suffering. The leg is in pain. And how can I take care of this? How can I deal with leg pain? Not, I'm in pain. I'm in suffering. Exaggerate the whole thing. And your whole being's occupied, overwhelmed, taken over by the leg pain. And also, with the reoccurrence of the act, the same act, we may possibly form a generalized opinion or taking that leg pain incident. Oh, the leg pain is killing me. I'm feeling terrible. I'm in suffering. And then generalize when it next sitting, I got leg pain again. Tomorrow, leg pain again. The day after, leg pain again. And generalize the whole thing. Oh, sitting meditation is bad. It creates leg pain. It creates suffering. Definitely, I will not meditate at all. It generalizes the whole thing. If this act reoccurs or happened to some other people, then a generalized opinion may form toward a group of people, toward a race, to a certain class of people. This is how this discrimination mind forms. Okay. And saying that you don't agree with the way how things was taken care of, how people are mistreated, you see that clearly, the act. You don't like, you don't agree. Instead of generalizing that police are evil, the enemy are you know, they are the enemy of the black people. Which is not fair because there are still very good cops who care for their citizens and risk and even sacrifice their lives to protect ours. That generalized opinion form, the discrimination in the society, institutionalized. So we have to remind ourselves, everyone is unique. One person in this group or in this race committed a wrongdoing does not mean other people in the same group or race are also bad and should be penalized. So please do not generalize the whole group of people from a few incidents. I'm sure there are many, many good cops, police in our country, doing their very best to protect ourselves, to protect us. And moreover, this person who commit the evil doing as he is now, but 5 years, 10 years from now, he may be a different person. So it does not make sense to continue to bear your hatred for 5 more years or 10 more years toward that new person, toward that different person. By doing that, you do nothing good to yourself or to that person or to others. To others in the same group, in the same race. You simply continue to cultivate your hatred, the mind of hatred. So please stop doing that. So this is something we can do to practice, engage in the practice of direct contemplation and see as instant an act that we should not be encouraging and that should be stopped. And what can we do to prevent this act from reoccurring again and again that affect others' life? Okay? And also we need to apply the teachings that we know of causes and condition, causes and effect. That's exactly the time to test ourselves, to examine ourselves, how much we really understand and digest and use the teaching of causes and conditions, causes and effects, to change this systemic injustice, the systemic injustice. Everyone has a responsibility, not just the police or the black communities. Every one of us living on this planet share this common responsibilities. Simply because we are interdependent, we are all connected. For us, Chan practitioners, it is helpful that we know the whole thing, the whole situation thoroughly, and looking from all aspects of the incident. As a matter of fact, I don't know much about the police system organizations, structures in this country. Yesterday, perhaps some of you know that the police chief in Toronto just resigned. It came out of nowhere. So I start, paying attention to that because it's quite unusual. It's quite complicated. We need to work on the problems. It's not simple. It's not definitely not like somebody suggests defunding the police department, completely phase out the police department. We don't need police, we only need community work and social programs. That's kind of too optimistic, I would say. you need to know how the system works, how does all these problems come from. It has a history. It's very complicated. With the structures, with all different parties involved, we have to know that, okay? And that's also a practice of a clear mind. So I see this is a good timing for us to examine our discriminating mind. Every one of us has this discriminating mind. This is the truth, undeniable. I do. So this is a good timing to examine our discriminating mind. And then pay attention to how our discrimination minds, how our discriminations take shape and take hold of us. You have to see that. You have to observe that. If you don't see that, you don't observe that, how are you going to dissolve that? And how does it play out? How does this ruminating mind affect you, affect your family, affect others? So this is a good time for us to look into that and apply the direct contemplation, as I said, in our daily lives, almost every activities. That's the time you practice direct contemplation. And by doing so, to reduce our discriminating mind is the first step I can do, that we can do. It's the first step that we can make contribution to solve this problem. Every one of us counts. Every one of us share this responsibility. When every one of us start to look into this, examine this, reducing our discriminating mind, it helps. This, at least, is something we can do. Okay? My talk ends here now.